You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, our weekly chat show where for the next hour we get the opportunity to talk to women about a variety of subjects which can be inspirational and often thought-provoking. I'm Ivana O'Brien and alongside me today is the lovely Amanda Weller. Hi Amanda.
Hi Ivana.
Lovely to be presenting with you today. Who have we got on the show?
Well, today we have three guests in the studio to talk about corporate volunteering in the community, wellbeing through our woodlands and marketing, which all sounds really interesting. So if you'd like to join in with any questions or comments, do email studio@brooklynsradio.co.uk. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks, Amanda. And so to kick off the programme today, we'd like to welcome Tracy Jarvis, CEO at Community Matters Partnership Project. Welcome, Tracy.
Hi.
Before we talk about some of the amazing things that you're currently involved with, can you just tell our listeners a bit about what's brought you to this point?
Sure. Thing that's brought me to this point.
Like a career history, a bit of your career history.
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, I was born into a socially deprived community 42 years ago, and I went to a school in Aldershot in the 80s. So the start of my youth was perhaps not as inspirational as it probably is today, but the work that I do today is probably fed through growing up in a working class, highly deprived community. And what do I do today? I hopefully encourage lots of different companies to get involved in their communities and use their staff skills and expertise to help local charities, schools and youth groups.
So how did you get into that? Because I know that the organisation is big now from a brief chat I've had with you. But what led you to be able to galvanise everything that you have done?
Sure, and it's a funny story really. So I was working in an educational business partnership, and I was working with boys that were about to be excluded from school, and I was matching them up with the employers. Really successful project. The boys went on to work for these employers, and the employers had loyal employees for a long time, so it's a great project. But then the government changed and the funding for that program went. So I was in the shower actually shaving my legs, as us women do, and I thought, I wonder if there's a way that I can potentially create myself a job and continue to do this great work that the companies have been doing for the community. So I went to four companies that I'd work with and I said to them, look, I know that the Education Business Partnership is going. It's not going to be funded by government. The work that you've been doing is fantastic. You as a company have benefited hugely from it, and so has society. So can we maybe do something together to keep that going? So they said to me, okay, Tracy, sounds like a great idea, but how much do you want? So I said, well, look, there's four of you. If you put £5,000 in each, that gives us a first year £40,000 budget to play with, a salary for me, some marketing costs, a website, and let's see what we can do. And what they said was, okay, we're half that. We'll give you £2,500 each. Go and get another four companies involved in the scheme. And let's see if we can do it that way.
So how many years ago was that when it first started?
It would be 9 years. So 10 years next year. Okay. We are.
Except 2010, because I work in education as well.
Right.
Similar sort of thing.
Right.
They have connection centres up and down the country. They
yeah.
were cut.
Yeah.
Kids
Aim
used to
higher.
Go there. Yeah. Yeah. Sure Start centres.
Yeah.
So I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah.
So how did it grow then? So it's obviously it started off with a few businesses that you got involved in.
Yeah.
Where did you take it from there?
So it started off in 2010 with four businesses, which we grew to eight at the end of the first year, and we're now just on 49 businesses. So we're hoping to get to 50 by the end of this year, which will be great to have 50 businesses. Now, within those 50 businesses engaged in the project, there's 17,000 corporate volunteers who are all allowed between 1 and 3 days a year to volunteer their time, skills and expertise to schools, charities, not-for-profit organisations.
Sorry, did you say 17,000?
17,000,
across
yeah.
the country?
Across those 50 businesses.
Wow,
so within those 50
amazing.
Businesses,
because obviously, because often people within a company like to have some time that the company will allow them to volunteer when it's in company time as well. They can do that, can't they?
Yeah, and what companies find really difficult is they say to their staff, you can have 3 days a year to volunteer, but it often isn't used. It's often an untapped resource. What we do as CMPP is make it very easy for staff to go out and actually use those days really valuably, giving their expertise to different people that need it in the community.
So how do you source what the volunteers do?
So charities, schools, not-for-profits apply online for helping hands to our website. We then look at that request and it might be a request that fits a certain company. If it's engineering, it might go to one of the engineering companies. If it's for manpower, it might go to a company that's got 2,000 staff in that want to get out and do hands-on physical stuff. If it's for some marketing support, it might go to one of our marketing companies. And we tend to resource 98% of requests that come in. We rarely are unable to help because we've got such a huge bank of resource there.
What must be quite a good leverage for companies is if they see other companies in their area that are already involved, then that's good for you to go to and say, look, we've already got 50 companies involved, what's stopping you from getting involved as well?
And the bigger it's got, the easier it's got.
Exactly.
I mean, the first few years of doing this, it was tough, and it was in a recession, and everyone's like, no company's going to give money in a recession, it's just not going to happen. But I think that was the point, was actually this is when companies really have to dig deep and help support their community. And if we can do that as a collaboration of businesses, we can do it very cost effectively because everybody shares the price of that support. So £5,000 for a corporate company isn't actually a huge investment for the return to society and the benefits that they gain as a business from taking part in such activity.
And wouldn't it be great if all of them had to have that corporate responsibility?
It would change the world, in my opinion.
Really,
I mean,
would.
It sounds, but it doesn't only change society, it changes culture within a company, and that is amazing for that company. The morale changes, the motivation changes, and as a result of that, companies' bottom line benefits because the staff are more productive.
And motivated,
And motivated,
Because it's a charity called Transformation Trust. We used to go into schools and do the, in another role, do like employability workshops, how to write your CV, how to get a job, interview techniques, all that kind of stuff. And that was funded from other companies, literally.
Yeah, absolutely,
Do you do something like that as well?
We do, So schools often take, and we have some mock interviewers. So then we go to the HR people within those 50 companies who are experts at interviewing and say, could you go and interview these Year 11 students and provide some feedback and job descriptions? We do speed dating, so we particularly like to work with children that are perhaps not engaging in the school curriculum and could do with some outside professional business mentoring, and we set some great schemes up to get them back on track and ideally send them into an apprenticeship or future employment as well. But what I think we do more than anything is leverage the goodwill of people, because most people are absolutely willing to do something,
of course,
as long as you make it easy for them and valuable as an activity for them.
Can you give us an example of a project, a recent one?
A really good one we did recently was work with the army in Aldershot.
Okay.
Who are obviously a big set up in Aldershot, the garrison. And we worked with Cove School with a group of 16 students who weren't attending school due to low self-esteem, low aspirations, just not engaging and underconfident. So we set up a six-week pop-up caf. We worked with the army Gurkha chefs of the garrison and the students to set up and run a catering company effectively. And the kids that came onto that program were amazing. They really engaged in it. The end result was having a meal in the school hall for all the governors, all the staff, all the parents, and there was tears at the end because the parents were like, I never would have thought my child could ever have done this project. And 98% of them again engaged back into the curriculum, so it was a small intervention made a massive difference. It was lovely because we went to the meal and seeing the parents and the teachers, and you think, this is what it's all about. Little acts of goodness, kindness,
And you say 98% then
re-engaged with the curriculum. And went over the 80% attendance rate again, so it really did work as a project for them because it was all about confidence. Suddenly they saw a result of their work, they felt great, and they thought, oh yeah, okay. So it gave them confidence to go back in, and they bonded as a group of children that weren't, so they had that support network from each other as well, which is awesome.
And that community thing is always so important, isn't it? I have to just say, it's just off as a tangent, your name, Community Matters, I really liked that. When I was doing a bit of research earlier today, I thought, that's so clever, isn't it? Because, you know, it could be, you know, the importance of community, but also things relating to that community. And I thought there was a... Did that take you a long time to come up with?
It was quite quick, but we had a problem because Waitrose run a scheme called Community Matters, which is why we had to have the partnership project at the end so that it wasn't confused with Community Matters. You know, the green coins? That's the Waitrose CSR scheme. But it does represent what we're about. Community does matter. It matters to the company. Within that company, the people that work there, their children go to local schools. You know, so whatever we do as a society, it works hand in hand. And the more we can encourage businesses to understand the social impact benefits back into their business, I think the better we will be as a society.
And what about if other areas were listening and thought, oh, I wonder if we could have that for our area, I wonder if they can go to our local schools, how could that come about?
So at the moment we work in mainly predominantly Farnborough, because that's where it's set up. Last year we went into Woking, working with Woking Borough Council, who are supporting us to go in and talk to companies about CSR and corporate volunteering. And we're just about to go into Surrey Heath, Camberley area next year. The way we do that is we work with a local council. The local council will second a member of their community team to work with us very closely to help us to spread the word within those areas about
Because you've obviously got to have their support, haven't you, to move it forward?
Because otherwise it's a capacity issue. Yeah. How do you go into a new area without any staff?
Of course,
so you need to work in partnership and collaboration. And that works anyway.
Yeah.
Start to bring people together.
Something I was intrigued about was the canine project for Manor Junior School. What was that all about?
Yeah, so again, just by having conversations, BMW, who are one of our partners, rang up and said, we want to do something a bit special. We've had some profit that we didn't know we were going to have at the end of our financial year. And we want that money to be spent in schools to do something around well-being and mental health. So we knew of this project, one of our charities, Canine Assist, who go into schools with a dog, but they use the dog to talk about how children might feel. So the dog will pick a card, so the card might say angry or sad, and then they use the dog to choose a card, and then the child will talk about how the dog might feel around that emotion. So if the dog went into this situation, there was another dog trying to steal its toy, how might the dog feel? And they use the dog to talk about emotions and well-being, which is really clever. And again, the school rang up after the project finished and said, look, it was transformational in terms of getting the children that close that don't know how to express their emotion, talking by using an animal to do that. And the animal was gorgeous. I mean, how can you not fall in love with that?
Exactly. That's
beautiful,
amazing,
little dog.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And I wondered as well about the various airport. There was an event at Farnborough Airport, wasn't there? You've done a couple of twilight things, and with children as well. That looked fun and presumably productive in spreading the word and all the rest of it as well.
Yes, it became an annual event, our Twilight Challenge.
Oh, okay.
And it's part of how we fund the whole organisation. So how do we fund CMPP and do all the work for those 50 companies? When the companies sign up to us and become a partner of the project, they donate a fee.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives us £70,000 of income every year. But we're £30,000 short on paying the cost of the staff team that needs to be in there to run it.
Okay.
So we host 6 fundraising events each year. Our main fundraising event, our flagship fundraiser, is the Twilight Challenge, which raises about £20,000 for us each year.
Goodness.
Which then goes back into those schools, charities and projects. And we have about 1,000 people turn up and run, skip, hop, jump, scooter the airport runway, which is great. I mean, it's a fantastic event. And very luckily for us, TAG were funding, Farnborough Airport were funding the cost of that event, so every single penny that came in through entrance fees went into the charity pot to be able to do more projects and get bigger and bigger.
Fantastic.
Which is great.
Yeah.
But we did a mini Twilight this year for the first time.
I saw a little
so
video.
Cute. So cute. Little ones running, and they're dead serious. You know, you think they're only under 8, but no, they are dead serious. You know, great event and really good for their well-being. Created some great funds for us, sponsored by BMW Mini again, who are one of our partners.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a great way to fund good community projects, I think.
Yeah.
events that people enjoy.
That's so inspiring, especially in the current climate where it's I presume not always that easy to raise the funds that you need. So what other things do you do to for the extra sort of 10,000 gap that what other sort of
so that's 20,000. The other 10,
yeah.
We do 5 other events. So we do a Christmas fair, annual Christmas affair. We do quiz nights, 2 quiz nights, a Halloween one and a St. Paddy's Day quiz night. We ask our partners to contribute if they want to maybe host a fundraising event a year for us. So some companies
Fantastic.
Will do a dress down day.
Okay.
Others might do a cake sale. And that adds around about £5,000 a year in partner contributions. And then at the end of the year, some years we're up and other years we're down. But within the 10 years, we seem to have made it to the end of each financial year, really. But it is always tight for charities. You never have a bag of money that
yeah.
you can sit back and relax. We've always got to be out there talking to companies, come and join us, thinking about other fundraising events, being adaptive and creative. We're very lucky in how £100,000 isn't a lot of money to pay a group of people.
Yeah, how many of you are there in your
So there's 6 of us, but we're all part-time.
Okay.
So we all work 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
I do a little bit more as a CEO. I do 4 days a week, but the team that manage all the events, the fundraising, are 2 days, but they are all mums who have worked in quite senior careers, have become mums, and realise that perhaps they can't do the London commute every year, every day, not every year. So they come to work with us, and they've got great skills base, but we can be flexible around childcare issues. We can, you know, give them really great projects to get stuck in, so it's great for their intellect. And
it's a win-win,
it works. It works, so we're very lucky.
It's really good. I mean, you've talked a bit about the Community Matters Partnership Project. Tell us a bit about the Looking Glass Network, Tracy. What's that all about?
So the Looking Glass is a network for female business professionals to come together to learn something new from a guest speaker or an insight into a certain topic, and to form relationships with each other and support each other. A modern day creative network, I would say, for women business owners.
Do you run that as well yourself?
Well, yes.
Do you go to bed at all?
No.
To sleep?
Not very often.
How do you do it?
But I think that was set up because I was trying to meet companies, and most networking events are 6:30 in the morning, and I am a mum. I have to do a school run, so I could never get to the...
They're hopeless, aren't they? They just don't work, do they?
They don't work for me.
No,
they just don't work. And also, I do think, does anyone actually want to get up at 6:30 and talk to somebody? It takes me about 9 hours to get going. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I could set up my own network and meet some new people that way. I don't know how it actually turned into a women's network. I think I was talking to people, and lots of people were saying, be good to actually have a network where we could talk about childcare issues and working as women in business. So that's where the Looking Glass started from, really.
So how often do you meet?
We do 4 events a year at the Village Hotel in Farnborough. We have a guest speaker, and then we break down into roundtable syndicates to talk about those activities and that topic that we're discussing at that time.
And they are great events. I have to say, I've attended a couple, and they're so well organised. I have never been to a meeting like it, actually.
Oh, great! Yes,
that's a great endorsement, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, where would you like to take the CMPP moving forward? What would you like?
I see CMPP
more businesses coming on board, more different areas.
Different area. Why wouldn't you have a CMP in your community? Mm. It's funded by businesses predominantly and fundraising activities, so it doesn't cost the public purse anything. Businesses win from it, community groups win from it, and we can coordinate all that activity. So I would like CMPP to be nationwide. How do we get there? We need some support to enable us to grow the infrastructure to support other local communities.
And as you said before, would the starting point be the local councils, the local authorities, to come on board first and then say, look, we'd like to understand a bit more about this. We think we've got businesses in our area that could take part. Would that be a starting point, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. That's how we work with the two councils we're working with at the moment, is we meet with them and we talk about that exactly as it is. The other thing that we do as CMP, we bring all those businesses together 4 times a year, quarterly. We update them on the community activity, but we also enable them to form relationships so that within that community, the economic development starts to take place.
So if Epsom and your borough council are listening, please, could you contact Tracy? And on that note, Tracy, can you tell us, if listeners want to get in touch, how they can do that?
Sure. They can email hello@cmpp.org.uk, or they can follow us on any social media platform at CMP Project One.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much. That was Tracy Jarvis, CEO at Community Matters Partnership Project. And now we're going to have a short ad break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Katie Robinson from the FBI, but not as you know it. So stay tuned.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio.
Join us on December the 7th at the Kempton Park Auto Jumble for a packed motorcycle auto jumble and off-road and racing show. There'll be a huge selection of jumble stalls and trade stands, offering bargains on all sorts of motorcycle items and project bikes. We also welcome some beautiful machines from the off-road and racing worlds. If you like bikes, you'll love the Kempton Park Auto Jumble, December the 7th. It's a great day out for any motorcycle enthusiast. Check out kemptonparkautojumble.co.uk for more details.
Picture this, a Sunday lunchtime carvery where you can eat as much as you want with a choice of 1, 2, or 3 courses. You're free to help yourself to succulent pork, beef, chicken, or gammon. And if you wish, you can have them all. Add in a homely, family-orientated environment with free parking, and you have your perfect destination for the perfect Sunday lunch. It's all here at the Best Western Ship Hotel by Monument Green, High Street, Weybridge. Book now on 0800 393 130. We're one of the most welcoming places to eat in Weybridge.
Help us celebrate the joy of reading aloud. It's time to vote for the winner of the 2019 Surrey Libraries and Brooklands Radio Reading Aloud competition. We've received nominations from people all over Surrey, sharing stories of the people they love to hear reading aloud and what makes them so good at bringing stories alive. Please help us choose the winner. Go to the Surrey Libraries or Brooklands Radio website and listen to our 8 shortlisted nominees reading aloud. And vote for your favourite by Sunday the 8th of December. Tune in to Brooklands Radio on Christmas Eve to hear the winner reading aloud a magical Christmas story. Help us celebrate the joy of reading aloud. Vote for your favourite by Sunday the 8th of December.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Okay. Welcome back to Just Women with me, Amanda Weller, and Ivana O'Brien. Our next guest is Katie Robinson. Katie says she is an advocate for natural therapies, having raised her two sons to adulthood while only bothering the medical profession on a handful of occasions. She'll be running half and full day workshops in 2020 on how to nurture ourselves and family first aids using natural holistic therapies. She's also available as a speaker. She and her colleagues at the Forest Bathing Institute run regular events in the Surrey Hills, introducing people to the wonderful benefits of well-being through our woodlands. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to have you here. Before we get into the fascinating things you're currently involved with, can you tell us a bit about your background?
Well, I first started getting interested in natural ways to improve our health, I suppose, when I was a teenager, and I came downstairs one morning to find that my mum had thrown away all the sugar in the house. And we sort of leapt on and said, "What are we going to put on our cornflakes, Mum?" And she said, "I've thought of that, dried fruit." So although it took a bit of getting used to, we accustomed ourselves. And the upshot of it was that she was reading a lot of health stuff, and she'd read an article saying that sugar was poison, it created disease states in the body, and that we were not going to be having it anymore. So that was my introduction, and it sort of sparked my interest, and so I went off into various other things. And I've used nutrition, I've done nutrition courses for homeopathic first aid, use essential oils, herbs, all sorts of things. And I really love how empowering it is to make choices for yourself and just use the medical services for backup.
So what all those things tend to have in common is that whatever you've done in the past tends to be helping others in some way. Would you say that's quite fair?
Yes.
One of those people that likes to help others.
Absolutely.
What intrigued me about the FBI, sorry, Forest Bathing Institute, I mustn't say that anymore, was the fact that in Japan it's been around since the 80s, isn't it?
Yes, that was, I think it was 1982 that the phrase was first coined, Shinrin-yoku, and a lot of research has actually gone on through, mainly through Professor Qing Li at the Nippon Medical School, who has spent decades researching this. So there's actually a wealth of scientific data on the benefits to it and also how it works. For example, he locked people in a hotel room and just diffused essential oils and discovered that about 50% of the benefit from being in a forest comes from the plant chemicals that are deposited on us and what we breathe in. So, and then there's all sorts of other benefits come from that.
But they have it, it's available within the NHS in Japan, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. It has been early 2000s, I think. And you get a choice, actually, with the health services in Japan. So you say you go in with high blood pressure, they can offer you the medication, or you can choose to go for a 2 to 3 hour walk in some ancient forest. And if you choose to do that, then you would go to a forest bathing centre. They have 64 approved forests there. And they would take your measurements before, send you off with a little route map and suggested things of what you might do at certain points around there, and then come back, take your measurements again so you can see how it's improved. Mm-hmm. And they've discovered that it's actually 2 hours in ancient forest is roughly equivalent to taking a blood pressure tablet, so it causes about the same
chemical reaction.
Chemical, you know, that's amazing. Drop in blood pressure.
Goodness me, and when there's such a call on funds, you know, there's a huge implication there, isn't there?
Yes, it would drastically reduce our NHS drugs bill. Well, for sure.
And I always have this thing, you know, that actually prevention surely has got to be better than, you know, ending up at a trickier stage later on.
No, certainly as the Forest Bathing Institute, our focus is, and the Japanese focus is, on preventative medicine.
Makes to eminent avoid sense.
Some of the worst things.
Myself and Amanda both watched that video with the doctor in Japan. I found it really interesting. You can see how much research he was putting out all the time, the evidence about how this thing works. Mm. And so you're funding some PhD students over here, aren't you?
Well, we've actually had links with roughly, I think it's 5 universities in the UK. And the first, the University of Derby, has just completed some studies. They ran a number of sessions up in Derbyshire.
What were they
in
about?
In semi-ancient woodland. And they were measuring, they had extensive questionnaires, which took about half an hour to fill in, on, sort of emotional and mental factors and how people were feeling beforehand to establish what their baseline was. And they also took blood pressure and heart rate variability readings. And then they took them again at the end, and they then had to fill in the questionnaire to see the differences. Oh, actually, just thinking, we've had the results from the questionnaires back. We're still waiting for the other half of the data, and they said the participants scores improved on measures of safe and relaxed positive effect, compassion for others and from others, rumination on problems, connection with nature and environmental attitudes, and notable improvements in mood disturbance like depression, anger, tension, confusion, fatigue. So we're waiting for the HRV data to be processed, and that will come out probably next year.
So
it's very exciting. We've got some other universities. We're discussing how those might go, with each university choosing perhaps an area that particularly interests them.
So even though it says forest bathing, just to kind of clarify, it doesn't mean that there's any water involved. It doesn't mean that you have to lie on any leaves. It's just how do you bathe in the trees?
Well, it's bathing in the entire atmosphere of the tree, of the forest. So that would be, obviously, you get the benefits of the essential oils and the plant chemicals, as we've discussed. Also, visually, it's very relaxing because you have no straight lines, no right angles. So that is apparently easy for our eyes and our brains to process, and the same with the colours blue and green. You see a bit less blue in Britain, but you know, they're considered very relaxing colours when we do see the blue. And you know, so we've got different ways there. It processes through hearing, that's the word I'm looking for, as well. You find things like bird song. Mm. If you've ever been in, you know, and you hear breeze and you listen, it's really quite meditative. If you really pay attention, and this is really what we do, we guide people with suggested ideas. Nothing, there isn't really a wrong way to do it, but we give ideas because it takes the thinking and processing element out of the experience. We just want people to experience it and not be thinking and overthinking and double guessing.
To be in the now.
Absolutely. And it's really, you know, it's mindfulness in the forest, where you're using all your senses to absorb what's going on around you. And just to clarify, you might end up lying down, although we do bring waterproof rugs and or ask people to if we're planning to. But it's, you can sit or you could stand against a tree, so there's no obligation to do anything. But it is possible that we might be lying down. But no bathing or water
involved.
And usually a fair number of layers involved with clothing, so extra more than fewer.
And I have to say, I tend to I'm very lucky. I live very near some wooded hills. Mm-hmm. And when I need a bit of space and to think and to be creative, I just pull on my wellies and I go. Is creativity something that is also covered and, is this a known thing as well?
Yes, yeah. That's very interesting you say that actually, Amanda, because some studies have been done. I can't recall whether they were generally in nature or specifically forests, but certainly studies have been run which show that after time spent in nature and in forests, that it clears us, I think. It clears your brain from those whirling, that list making, that stressing about things, worrying about what's going on in our lives or work or whatever. It clears that away, so it then allows you actual space in your head to be able to be creative, to maybe have a bit of inspiration that solves an issue. Yeah. That no amount of thinking was working.
And I saw on your website that there was a reference between ancient trees and ancient woodland and, I don't know what the phrase was, but more newly planted woodland.
Yes, yeah.
I'm presuming that the ancient would be more beneficial. Is that correct?
Yes. They, because ancient woodland, in Britain it's categorised as over 400 years old, okay. Purely because records began in the 1600s, so that's, if it was already there at the point, that's considered ancient. There is semi-ancient and then there are sort of more recent ones, and we often don't really know how old some of them are. But what we've discovered, and I suppose in particular Professor Susan Simard at the University of British Columbia discovered, that there's this network of fungus going on which has connected all the trees up, and that the power of the chemicals that they're released, the strength and the ability to share nutrients.
This is through their root system, isn't it?
Yes, the root system and the fungal network join up so that it's not actually the tree's roots that are interconnected. It's the stringy little fungi that connect the roots. And they take a little payoff of some food for themselves. But, I believe that it's the fungi that produce things like amino acids, which, then the trees take some of, and they take some of what the trees do. So they can share it. And, of course, the longer this network has had to build up, the more powerful it is. And also the age of the trees, the power of the essential oils and the chemicals that come off them, they are stronger the older the trees are, and the greater the network, the stronger the ability of that woodland to resist things like pests and invasions, and whether it's deer nibbling them or whatever.
Can I just read something about the research around the trees that it says on the website, which I found fascinating? Research shows that trees really do have healing powers. For one thing, they release antimicrobial essential oils that protect trees from germs and have a host of health benefits for people. The oils boost mood and immune system function, reduce blood pressure, heart rate, stress, anxiety and confusion, improve sleep and creativity, and may even help fight cancer and depression. I'm going to live in the forest after this. I've decided.
It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
It's a no-brainer.
It's absolutely fascinating. It's so fascinating. If you actually look at some of the research on essential oils, some of the most powerful ones, antimicrobial, you think of tea tree oil, mm-hmm. How powerful that is. I mean, I remember reading years ago it was stronger than carbolic, which always used to be the go-to disinfectant in times past. Frankincense, if it's pure, which usually it isn't, but that's a really strong one as well. And there are a lot of the tree oils, they also work on our emotions a bit as well. They can be fairly grounding, which isn't really surprising because they help us feel in our bodies, because you consider how solid they are. I mean, they don't move, do they?
No.
So, it is amazing. There is actually, if you look around, you will see that there is a fair bit of use of oils in some chronic disease conditions.
And it's lovely when you see children out in nature, especially sort of climbing trees in the woods, sort of playing. And do you think there's a danger that technology is going to sort of reduce that because kids won't want to go out anymore, less and less, that they'll spend less time? Maybe they'll imagine being in a forest rather than actually going to a forest.
I'm not sure that, you know, I mean, if you imagine it then and you really feel you're there, that might work. But I don't know, because I don't think there are any experiments done on that.
They obviously pick up on the energy from trees when they're in the woodland, don't they? Because they're so happy and they're laughing and they're running around and having a great time.
Yes. Of course, there is a danger. But I think... You know, part of it may come from parents, because I've noticed, I think, what I was let to run around and do when I was younger and what we allow our
kids
to do. You know, we're very much more restricted, but I sent my sons off to scouts and beavers and cubs and things because, I mean, they just do things outside, and I thought that was... that felt like a good fit. And we also used to go walking in the Lake District sometimes. So I think I've always done things outside.
Yeah.
But this has really taken things up a level for me. I think we often go out, we think, oh, yes, I'll get my steps in, I'll do some walking, I'll take the dog out, I'll do some deep breaths, or I'm walking to get to a place. But for me, this is very different.
Yeah.
It's just going out there because
being,
and just being there and seeing what comes up during the experiences. There's no right, there's no wrong, there's some ideas, you can use them if you like, and really experiencing it. I think it's actually a real gift if people give themselves 2 or 3 hours to go out and meander around in some woodland. That's not something that we do, so it is really like a gift to yourself to say, you know what, I'm just going to take that time out. I can't think of a particular reason, but I just feel it would be a good idea. I think that's
so. What
really
sort of
important.
Things do you suggest then on your when you take people out? Are they what kind of is it? You take note of any bird song or smells, or
pace
yourself in a particular way, or I don't know what sort of things.
Yeah, there are lots of different things that you could do for each sense, but the idea is to cover most of the senses because, of course, we all have a preference as well, and you know, we'll have a sense that's perhaps more predominant for us. So we do a little sort of intro on the background, the science, the environment that we're in, and the importance of protecting woodlands, and then we will do. You know, it tends to be maybe visual and listening exercises first of all, so we might do a couple of those to get into things, and then listening sometimes, you know, the bird song is fantastic and you can't do anything but listen to the bird song, it's beautiful, and other times it might be really quiet, or you might have a little bit of rain and just that really tiny little drops as it's coming through the leaves, just literally spending 2 minutes listening to it can be really relaxing if you really focus on listening to the raindrops, for example. We'll do touching exercises as well, and smelling. I love smelling. And we do run things if it's still in the rain, because the smells are fantastic, as you probably all know, actually.
Well, you've converted myself and Amanda. We're going to be there within 2 weeks.
Good, excellent.
There. Uh-huh. So sadly, we're out of time, Katie. Can you just give the listeners some information about the website if they want to learn a bit more?
Yes, if they'd like to learn more about forest bathing, then it's tfb.institute for Forest Bathing Institute, and there are quite a number of areas of that you can go to. There's some blogs, there are contact, there are some events, some science, the background behind it. There is a training section as well, because we have been finding that sometimes one or two people who come to events really love it and they want to train as well, and we are looking for people so that we can roll this out more widely across the country.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. That was Katie Robinson from the Forest Bathing Institute, and also an advocate for natural therapies. Now we're going to have another short ad break, and we'll be back to talk to our final guest, Sarah Jones, from Sarah Jones Marketing. So stay with us.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio.
Dear, oh dear, how am I going to deliver all these Christmas goodies on time?
I have a plan, Mr. Claus.
But you're not licensed to drive the sleigh yet.
No, but I know of a company who can deliver all over the world with help of great couriers, including FedEx, UPS, DHL and Parcel Force. And, of course, the Royal Mail.
Who?
Mailboxes, etc. and Weybridge. Their courier services can all be tracked on the internet. They will even pack it all safely for us.
Packing as well? Excellent. Wait till I tell Mrs. Claus.
Mailboxes, etc. in Church Street, Weybridge is between Laura Ashley and Starbucks. Find us on the internet at mbeweybridge.co.uk. Around the corner, around the country, or around the world. You shop, We deliver.
Brooklands Radio's audience is growing. Potential listeners are listening, but are they hearing your message? Maybe you're saying to yourself, I don't know about internet radio, or maybe I should wait. Well, instead, think about it this way. Do you want to be one of the first businesses like yours to advertise on internet radio, or the last? So why not tap into the power of Brooklands Radio easily and affordably? Contact Fiona through sales@brooklandsradio.co.uk. That's sales@brooklandsradio.co.uk. Brooklands Radio, loving Surrey Radio. Brooklands Radio.
On Saturday lunchtime, straight after Diane Roberts' events in Surrey, join me, Barry Richards, for the weekend show. For the stories and events trending locally, nationally, and across the globe. As well as the weird and wacky stuff, we've got Celebrity Buzz, we've got the Time Capsule, we've got bizarre facts from our database, not a lot of people know that. And the music features tracks from our Brooklands Radio beloved playlist. So for more mischief and mayhem, join me, Barry Richards, between 12 and 3 on Saturdays. Loving Brooklands Radio at the weekend.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Yvonne O'Brien and Amanda Weller. Our final guest is Sarah Jones from Sarah Jones Marketing. Before we talk about some of the interesting work you're currently involved with, Sarah, can you just tell the listeners a little bit about your career background? What, have you always been involved in marketing or did you do other things?
Yeah, so I've been doing marketing for about 15 years kind of professionally, but I'm one of those weird people that knew what they wanted to do when they were at school.
Oh.
So, yeah, I have a real passion for marketing. So I've been doing it for quite a while now. I get very excited and animated about it.
So how does a school pupil get excited about marketing? Did you have like the enterprise days where you took part and sort of coming up with ideas for things? And is that how it started?
Or? Nothing quite as glamorous as that. I remember watching the football with my granddad and wanting to be involved with putting the advertisements on the football shirts. I didn't know it was called marketing at that time, but I just got really excited about it. I want to do branding and sponsorship, and then here I am doing B2B marketing, so it's a little bit further away than the football pitch.
Can you just clarify what B2B is, just for anybody who doesn't know?
If I do any jargon, you have to let me know. So business to business is when you are trying to target other businesses. So you're a business yourself and you want other businesses to know about your services. So you could be a technology company offering software and you're trying to reach other businesses who need that software. Maybe you need that software to help you with your payroll or your HR, or help you to send more emails for your marketing. It's those types of things that are of value to another business.
Do you think sometimes that businesses could move forward faster, but it's almost like they don't want to bite the bullet and employ someone else that's better at doing the marketing than they could be, so they just end up doing nothing and the business just stalls?
I think that's the case, but you can understand it. When you've put your heart and soul into setting up your business, it's a little bit about kind of giving away that control. And I guess my message is, it's not about giving away control, it's calling in an expert to help you to accelerate to that next growth. You know, you don't have to know all the answers to everything. You'd go to a solicitor if you had a legal question, or an accountant if you're not sure with your numbers. So marketing is a kind of as a skill, it's a technical competency. It's something that you should be investing in, because it will make the difference between your brand and somebody else's brand. Because the art of good marketing is making sure that you're able to drive those sales lead by creating the right kind of brand awareness. So in simple terms, that means putting your message in front of the right customer at the right time. And it's a skill to be able to do that.
I mean, you do mention on your website, which makes perfect sense, you could have the best idea in the world, but if no one knows about it,
exactly.
It's pointless.
Absolutely, exactly. And that's what good marketing is. So yes, it's hard to let go of that control, but if you're going to accelerate your growth, then you need a professional and you need a plan. And actually, there's 50% of UK SMEs don't have a marketing plan. Which, when you think about it, is really worrying, because there's so much opportunity. But for my business model, it's great, because that's 50% of the marketplace I can go and have a conversation with.
Absolutely. I think it's also, the thing is that businesses are experts in doing whatever it is they do as a business and not necessarily the marketing. So that's another good reason for calling in an expert, isn't it? Because it frees them up to do what they're good at and what they could be using their time more productively for.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. So you might have the best product in the world. So you might do kind of, say you have developed a piece of software to do accountancy. But just because you're good at building the software doesn't mean you're good at selling it or packaging it or marketing it. So it's about calling on those skills to help you, really. And those skills are really designed, what I do to help is to identify, well, how are you going to get your message in front of the right customers? And that's the really important piece, because anyone can tell everybody about what they're doing. It's the right customers. And then how do you understand how they're going to behave across channels, how they're going to communicate with you? How do you really start to create a dialogue, a conversation that cuts through that noise? So being really clear about your proposition, your messaging, what your values are and what you stand for are really important. But also understanding things like, what's your pricing strategy? Mm-hmm. What's your customer service strategy? How do you take your product from something that's really great to in something that's even better? So there's some real skills that you need to kind of look at, and that's where I can help. So lots of the customers I work with, they're already doing really well. Their businesses are doing well. They just need that help either to kind of get more customers, so get more customers that look profitable to them, or close pipeline. So some customers I have got a healthy pipeline, but they're not sure how they're going to close it. So it's about understanding customer journeys, buying signs, being able to communicate messages that way. Or some customers have, you know, their customers are great and they're retained, but maybe they want to upsell or cross sell products to them.
So sorry, when you say about a healthy pipeline, we're not talking about obviously gas or anything like that here. What do you mean when you say that?
So they could have lots of customers who've shown intent to buy a product, but they haven't crossed the line. There's something that's stopping
them.
Got
to close the sale.
So maybe, yep, they've got to close the sale. So maybe it's because they're already in a contract, or maybe it's because they just haven't given enough attention to that, to the benefit they're going to get from getting that product. So there are marketing techniques you can use that will help you to close that sales cycle, and that's where I come in. So it's about understanding the right message, right channel, right audience.
So what kind of techniques and how would you go about it? Is there a recent example of a project that could sort of illustrate what you're telling us about?
So it's about understanding in terms of that customer. So you always start with the audience. So I won't go to specific on my customers because I've got confidentiality agreements in place, and that's fair enough.
Okay.
But I can talk to you about kind of an example. Really, you have to understand kind of the audience and where they are in that buying cycle. So say you're buying a house, for argument's sake. There are certain things in your life that will make you want to buy that house. So the important thing, so it might be that you're kind of, maybe you're getting married, maybe you're having a child, maybe you're moving to a new area for a new job. There are certain kind of buying behaviours that you will identify with making that purchase. The important thing is that when you go to make that purchase and buy that house, that you think of the brand that's going to help you first. So be that an estate agent, for example. So an estate agent needs to make sure that their brand is in front of those cues, so that when you go and buy that house, you think of them. It's likewise when you go to a supermarket and you want to buy some, some cat food, for example. Being able to look at data, understand where you are in terms of that buying cycle. So maybe you've just got a new kitten, for example. So you go to the supermarket, and at the supermarket you might buy a cat bed, cat food, trinkets, all these lovely, lovely things. Big supermarkets would know that you're in the market for buying a cat. So that gives them an opportunity to buy you vouchers of food, maybe linked to veterinary services, insurance, all these extra things. So understanding where you are in the buying cycle means that they give you an opportunity to be able to target new messages to you. But it also means that you're getting better quality messages, because you are interested in buying a cat and you are interested in all that information.
It's a bit like the reason why we get those really annoying pop-ups that come up on our phone when we've been to a certain website. And then obviously they're thinking, well, that person's interested in buying that, so potentially we could then sell her more things by reminding her of what she's missing out on the other things.
Absolutely. So it's kind of two ways to look at that. One way is to say, oh, that's really annoying, but then the other way which comes back to my earlier point, is marketers only want to send you the right message to the right audience at the right time. If you're, there's no point selling a shampoo to someone who's bald. They're not going to buy it. So embracing those types of data and those kind of types of cookies and promotion means that you're going to get a better quality message. Now, that is a transaction, and that transaction has got to be fair between the buyer and the receiver. So it's about understanding, you know, the value of your data and what you're getting in return. But that's, we could talk about that for a long time. Topic to kind of cover.
So do you influence how the companies that you work with collect their data? Do you have situations where they don't have the data that could be useful, so then they have to gather it for you, so then you can react more better for them, you know, in a way that's more useful for them? Or do they generally have the kind
of
data?
It's a combination of lots of different ways, really, to understand that. So it's understanding about their customers. So what do their customers look like? So you create things like personas. So what's the persona of your typical customer? So that you can then go out and create activity that would then attract more people that look like that persona. Mm-hmm. So it could be based on age, gender, where they live, what they do for a living, lots and lots of different kind of profiles, really. But the idea is to kind of match the product back to that audience. So I help them to create a persona of what does that customer look like. I also then can help them in terms of what channels to use, in terms of where do those people hang out. So the likes of social media or certain publications or certain events or certain types of activity, because there will become a theme around that persona that would match that product, and I can help them to achieve that.
So that, like, the four P's of marketing covering those?
Yes. Lovely.
Have, like, a common thing that companies come to you for support with? Is it like, for example, is it social media? Is it not having a more unique USP? Is it knowing how to close the sale? What is it that small businesses really struggle with?
I think it's creating that differentiation from other businesses, because there are lots of businesses are out there who can kind of have that me too. So what I help to do is identify where they're different. So why are they different to other people? So understanding that competitor landscape is really important. Mm-hmm. And lots of businesses don't do that because they're just so interested in going out and selling their product. So taking the time to do that is really important. Once you then can understand where there's a difference, you can build a plan that then goes out and talks to other people about what that difference might be. So a lot of the work I focus on is writing a strategy based on identifying gaps in that marketplace, then understanding how you build your messages around it to create that differentiation, and then making sure that that message is in front of the right audience. So I help them with plans across acquisition, so maybe things like what social media posts they write, what do they put on their website, what letters they might send in the post, emails, whatever is appropriate, really, and for that channel. So I help them then in terms of doing that piece of activity. And then the most important thing that I do is understanding the metrics relating to it. So what metrics are driving results? If I spend £1, are they getting £3 back? Because money is really precious, so it's about making sure that they are focusing on the right areas. And that's where my level of expertise come in and my experience, because I'm able to cut through that noise really quickly and guide them on that journey.
So do you want to just briefly mention some of the services you can provide?
Yes, certainly. So I work with companies to help them write their strategy. I take that strategy and make it into a plan, and then I help them to implement that plan. So that plan will focus on essentially accelerating the growth of their business. And I do that through a kind of a very bespoke and tailored service, whether they want to use agencies that they've got already or consultants that they might work with, or maybe they already have a team. So I help them to build that plan and then work with them to execute that plan, right through from doing it myself, like I say, working with people they might work with, or even just kind of coaching their team. So a lot of the companies I work with, like I say, already growing, they're already doing really well. They just need to understand what changes they can make to make that real impact, to make that difference.
Perfect. And just for the listeners, if they want to get in touch with you, can you tell us your website, Sarah?
Oh, yes, it's really easy. www.sarahjonesmarketing.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. That was Sarah Jones from Sarah Jones Marketing. And we'd like to thank all our guests on today's show. That's Tracy Jarvis, CEO at Community Matters Partnership Project, Katie Robinson from the Forest Bathing Institute, Sarah Jones from Sarah Jones Marketing, and also thanks to my lovely co-presenter, Amanda Weather.
Thank you. And just to say, we're always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives. So if you know someone who you think should be on our show, please email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and we'll get in touch with them.
Yes, and hopefully get them on a future show. Details of past and future guests are on our website, that's brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen, and you can find us on Facebook too at /justwomen.br and Twitter at Brooklands Radio. So thank you for listening and join us again next week for Just Women at 1 o'clock on Tuesday, repeated 8 o'clock on Thursday. So it's goodbye from me, Ivana O'Brien.
And it's goodbye from me, Amanda Weller.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.